We'll resume. We'll have questions. I'll answer the questions that we have. You know, we have a wonderful staff that assists us in putting on the these lectures. They spend actually days getting ready. To get everything over here for the lecture that we needed for today took three trucks. They had three vehicles, like a, to get all the things over here that are necessary. So I want to thank them very much. We have a staff full time, you know, that works every day of the week practically until all hours, making copies of tapes and correspondence and phone calls and orders and various things. There's another conference of interest. Hay House asked us, Hay House Mishka Productions, I think it's called, is going to have a conference in November at the Doubletree Resort in Scottsdale, right? Some weekend at which, I don't know how they contacted, but anyway, in which there'll be some well-known speakers. I'll do three workshops that weekend. The motivational speaker is going to be there.
Wayne Dyer.
Oh yes, Wayne Dyer is going to be there, and other people. Anyway, it's in Scottsdale in November at the Doubletree Resort. I don't know how you arrange for it, but I just thought I'd tell you about it. Now, what else were we doing? I think we took care of the announcements, acknowledgments, and I want to answer any questions people have.
Thank Morgan for taking our picture.
And that was a wonderful birthday party. I don't think in terms of birthday parties, and it was out of this world. And a beautiful picture, you know, Morgan did that. Who did it?
Morgan
sitting right in the front, didn't she? Yeah, Morgan did. Anyway, she's done some very beautiful photography. And I want to thank her for that. She did some very beautiful work. Let's see, what else we needed to say? I think we said it, have we? All right, now we want to answer some of the questions. See, each question is an opening into a whole, you know, you could do a whole lecture on each one. That one we did answer. Okay, so here's what is left to go, correct?
That's a bad check.
Yeah, well, that's a bad check. We've gotten a lot of mileage out of that check. I tell you, it's worth a lot more than it was written for. We've done it over and over again. Well, let's see. Some of these are sort of constructs, but we'll do the best we can. You said to know something, to really know, with a capital K, you have to actually be it. If Christ lived one lifetime, how could he experience so much? Well, that I don't know. our research merely was that Christ literally did come down from heaven. To reveal the truth to mankind as most beneficially he was capable of knowing it at the time. Christ was born, you know, at a time and in a culture that determined to some extent what he said. He didn't talk about karma specifically. He did mention that somebody, rather Elijah, was a reincarnation of John the Baptist. So he did acknowledge in Thomas, Gospel according to St. Thomas, that somebody was a reincarnation of a previously well-known person. From our own research, though, Jesus had never been prior a human being, never had a human embodiment, whereas the Buddha, in contrast, had had many. So they serve two different purposes, two different messages. You know, in general, my understanding of Lotus Land Buddhism and Christianity is that is the acknowledgement that the negativity of mankind is so so prevalent that the likelihood of reaching enlightenment from this level is very slim. Now, I never calibrated what was the energy level of mankind at the time of Christ. We know it was at 190 for centuries. Let's see what it was at the time of Christ's birth. We have permission to ask this in front of this audience. Resist. At the time that Jesus was born, the consciousness level of mankind was less than 190, resist. It was less than 180, less than 160, less than 140, less than 120, less than 100. My God. Consciousness level of mankind at the time of Christ's birth was only 100. What are you going to say to people who calibrate at 100? That would have any... they sort of lived, you know, past history is all about greed, hatred, the guillotine, remorse, guilt, despair. We have whole continents right now if we calibrate Central Africa. What's Africa? We have permission to do Africa, resist. Africa is over 120, resist. Africa is over 110. Africa, right now, the prevailing consciousness level of Africa is about 100, 110. The life expectancy, if you're born in Biafra or someplace like that, your life expectancy is probably 28 or something. You know what I mean? Infant mortality is extremely high. Everybody's got AIDS. Everybody's starving to death. Malnutrition is rampant. Somebody from one of those countries was on TV the other night, he and his wife. They're in their early 30s and they've got 9 children. So he's standing there pleading for his poverty. Well, he's, you know, wedded himself right into poverty, hasn't he? He's got 9 kids already and they're only in their 30s, you know, give him another 10 years. Talk about poverty, he's gonna be below the poverty level. So the responsibility, there isn't the conscious awareness. You haven't come up to integrity where you take responsibility for your actions and their consequences. You see? If I got 9 kids and I can't afford them, I've got to be up to 200 to get that I really got to stop making more kids, you know? Now that seems to us, you know, a given. Most people apparently don't believe that. So, all right, what did we say the level of consciousness was of mankind when Christ was born? 100? Approximately 100. All right, so he was born into tribal culture, which held to the belief in sort of a malevolent kind of gods. The gods of the Old Testament are prone to malevolence, anger, revenge, favoritism. In the midst of all that, he's supposed to bring the message of heaven, the reality of God and the reachability of heaven, and what kind of behaviors will lead you in this direction, and what kind of behaviors will lead you in that direction. That there is the destiny of heaven or hell following physical existence. So that was sort of a very basic message he gave, a very basic message. And at the time, even then, it was very, very revolutionary. He didn't speak of karma. I doubt very much it would have had any meaning at all to people in a culture like that. The Buddha was born in a culture on the border of Nepal, you know, where the Aryan culture was already quite ancient, and the experience of the presence of God as the self, to be enlightened, had already been a prior experience in that culture. So in the culture in which the Buddha was born, the concept of karma was not novel or revolutionary. He was born into a form. So India has a far more ancient spiritual culture than the Western world, and certainly the Islamic world. Other than that, I don't know. You'd have to ask them. To experience the totality of the consciousness of mankind is what went on with Jesus Christ. To comprehend its downside, to sweat blood at just looking at it, meant that he owned it as a totality, the totality of the energy field of what it is to be human, without necessarily experiencing it serially, you know. And karma would be the reincarnation, sort of re-experiencing what it means to be human, sort of serially. What is it like to be a slaver? What's it like to be a slave? What's it like to be each thing individually? Says, am I a vegetarian? And can you eat meat and achieve self-realization, etc.? The question of vegetarianism, which I haven't run into in a while, comes up periodically. The same with celibacy, the same with work, anything having to do with ordinary world. A person becomes spiritually aware or interested. They're going to start off at different levels. Somebody may start off at 100, some people may start off at 300, some people may start off at 400. So the questions, each one is like a koan, like a Zen koan. What is the meaning? Well, if you see physicality as life, and that if life is limited to physicality, then being a vegetarian would certainly make sense. One doesn't want to kill anything in order to survive. So at a certain level where you think the animal's dying and sacrificing itself to you, it would be wrong. Later on, you see the animal doesn't die anyway, and in fact, if you didn't eat it, it wouldn't even exist, and it doesn't even hardly notice going out of body. Let's say you're going to eat a steak, right? You say, poor cow's going to die because I eat the steak. You know, there wouldn't be any cattle out there. If nobody ate steak, there wouldn't be any cattle. So hundreds of millions of cattle would never know what it is to exist. It's only because you eat steak that they get to be here. You understand what I'm saying? Nobody eats me, then I wouldn't be here, would I? Let's ask the cow. The cow over in the invisible domain, you know. We'll ask the cow. We have permission to ask about the cattle. I'll resist. The cow notices it when he leaves the physical and goes into the other domain. Resist. He doesn't notice it. If you swat a fly, the fly just goes right on flying. He's in his astral body and he doesn't, etheric body, he doesn't notice that he's dead. When he's physical, he comes back. And the only, the witness would notice the difference, but the fly doesn't notice the difference. When you go out of body at death, all you notice is that the physicality is laying there, but there's no discontinuity in the sense of self. There's no discontinuity. There's no discontinuity in the sense of self at death. Resist. That's correct. So the cow doesn't even know that it just got eliminated from the physicality. That is a fact. It's a fact. The cow doesn't know it. Goes right on going along in his etheric body and has no interest in the whole deal. If you ask the more evolved cow, I was in a high state one time, probably the high 500s or somewhere, if you're worse. This is a statement of fact. It is my joy to give up my physicality for thee, O Lord. It's a fact. out of choice. I do sacrifice my physicality for that which is higher than myself, and in so doing, I join that which is divinity and share in that awareness. So the, by surrendering its physicality to a higher being, it supports the evolution of consciousness and karmically earns the right to that awareness itself. Let's see, we call that within the animal kingdom, that exists as animal grace. That's the grace of the animal. You know what's meant by animal grace?
No.
Huh? Animal grace is apparent. You look at it, a deer and it stands there and it's incredible grace, beauty, and magnificence because it is completely its own potentiality. It feels no tension between what it is and what it thinks it could be. It already is completely its potentiality. So it has infinite serenity. You know, my cat, as it sits there, is in a Buddha state. It's still, it's completely what it is, with no anxiety or strain. It's called animal grace. Mm-hmm. That is correct, is it? Yep. All right, so the grace of the animal is that it is the completion of its karmic potentiality. It is itself the perfection of the fulfillment of the potentiality of its essence. And that's why it has the Buddha nature. Let's say, we never ask a lot of these things in public. The animal is at one with Buddha nature, or is it? So you don't have to worry about the animal. All right, so if you think you're at the point where you think that you're killing life, it would be wrong to eat meat. When you see that that's all illusion, that no life is sacrificed, it's not possible to kill life. Life only shifts form, shifts dimension. Then it doesn't make any difference anymore because you're doing a cow a favor. By eating the cow, that cow will not come into existence. You understand that? Nobody will raise cattle if nobody eats them.
What if you killing a human?
Killing a human is a more sophisticated question. Killing a human, you see, the calibration of a thing depends on its intention. Intentionality. The belief that you're killing another human being and willfully defy God and do so then has a grave karmic consequence. If you're already enlightened, you see that no such a thing is possible. First of all, you wouldn't do it because of your sense of spiritual reality. So the question arises, is it possible on the level of the highest reality to kill another human being? What could you kill? You could kill this embodiment. Let's go, we better change our chairs around. If they're gonna be asking questions, you come over here. If you come over here, and I'll sit there.
Where?
You come over here, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was the question? Oh, okay. It's possible to, we have the permission to ask this question, resist. It's possible to actually kill another human being in reality, resist. It's possible to kill their physicality, resist. It's possible, let's see, what do I think is the reality? The reality is that you're volitionally forcing the person out of physicality. That's what's happening. Resist. Okay. It's not possible to kill the human being as a discrete entity resist? It's not possible. Okay. It's not possible. You can force the person out of a physicality. Let's say the person's riding along on a horse and you shoot him, and now the horse goes riding off with his physical body, which topples off, and the entity witnesses all this. Well, what right did he have to knock me out of the physical body? I mean, I was still in the game, you know? So you get knocked off the game board is what I see happening. I mean, my understanding is you get knocked off the chessboard, the game board of this time and this place in our physicality, but nothing else happens. And it was probably a karmic debt you paid off in doing that, you know?
Karma comes into that, though.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the whole karmic drama of it.
Why doesn't that same karma apply to kill the animal?
What does that say?
Why doesn't the same karma apply to killing an animal?
Well, you're talking about different dimensions. The belief that one is killing an animal when one kills it is why, at a certain level of consciousness, people are vegetarians. I was a vegetarian for 10 or 15 years. One day in a restaurant, I suddenly realized what the truth of it all was, and I thought, this is ridiculous. Here, I'm worrying about eating meat, and I am meat. My physicality is meat. Why should I be concerned about it? So then you shift to a different spiritual dimension in which no such thing is happening anyway, so there's nothing to worry about it. Yeah. You don't have to worry about meat because you are meat. Any lion will tell you that. That you're delicious. Delicious, delicious, delicious. The understanding then comes out of the level of consciousness out of which the question arises, not the answer. And therefore, multiple answers are possible to the same question. It's because of the intentionality of the question, the consciousness level at which it is arising, the context of it. So there isn't like an absolute question with an absolute answer. The question and the answer constantly change depending on how you look at it, how you contextualize it, who's asking the question at what time, and in what space, and in what context. You understand what I'm saying? At one level, it would be, let's say, wrong to eat meat. At another, it would be wrong to not eat meat. At another level, it's totally irrelevant. Well, it doesn't arise as a question in one's mind. Let's see, I can't read all these. Oh, yes. Of what importance to give the body in spiritual work? Well, the body, you would have the same reverence for the body as you would any other valuable possession, any other living thing. I try to treat my body as well as I do my kitty. Not always as well as the kitty, but generally as well as the kitty. Because it's like a pet, and you take good care of it. I mean, I take care of it, because if I don't, I get told to. If you haven't eaten all day, somebody says, you haven't eaten a thing all day. I say, oh, all right. All these questions are significant only at certain levels, you see. The degree to which you think your reality is your physicality would then determine how important that physicality is, washing it and putting it through purifications and various interesting things. Colonic irrigations, as I said, the colon is not always the fastest way to God, but you know, if you want. You go through periods of purification. People go into purification fits for years, you know. They're purifying their body of molds and fungi and what is all the crap that they don't eat? Mushrooms and...
Right.
What is it? What is it?
Candida.
Candida, they get candida. They imagine that there's toxins in the blood, blood poisons. You got to go for a blood cleanser. A blood cleanser, what did it?
Metal poisoning.
Metal poisoning, there's all kinds of miasmas. Night air, it used to be the night air. Used to catch tuberculosis from living in poverty neighborhoods. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of these illusions. How much reality to give them is really answered by the Course in Miracles. They have as much importance as you give them. The power of belief is what gives them any validity whatsoever. About lesson 76 or so, it says, I'm only subject to what I hold in mind. Right? The only subject to what I hold in mind. So if you think if you think moles will kill you, then you better avoid moles because they'll kill you. And yeah. So we go through a period, though, and I think it's sort of normal. People go through a period of physical concern, all kinds of cleansings, washings, purifications, and things. And then, of course, you realize you're not your physical body, and that's all sort of irrelevant. It's sort of like washing your car. And washing your car won't necessarily get you to heaven. But if you think that washing your car will get you to heaven, then the belief that it will get you to heaven will actually get you to heaven. The more often you wash the car, the higher you're going to get spiritually. At a certain point, I think it's everybody's concern. The idea that the blood is full of toxins and poisons, and you have to take blood cleansers and blood and gastrointestinal purification. People eat all kinds of weird things, soap and powdered pumice and weird crap with chlorophyll in it, you know, to clean out their intestinal tract. If you succeed in clearing out your intestinal tract, folks, I'm going to tell you, you're going to die. Because it's only because of the bacteria that live there, the little creatures that live there and digest the food and all, that enables you to live. So I wouldn't go cleansing out your colon too much without killing yourself, and cleansing out your blood and various things like that. You know, I would try and lead sort of a normal life. Undue attention to the physicality. I don't pay much attention to the thing. You know, you do what you need to do with it. And as I say, it's sort of a toy, it's a pet, it's certainly enjoyable. I mean, if I didn't have a body, I couldn't play with the kitty, could I? I mean, I couldn't cut the cake this morning. So, I mean, you know, it's good for certain things, you know. But I wouldn't overemphasize the body. You know, certain meditative practices, there's a great deal of attention to the body. Posture, all kinds of fancy breathing exercises, visualizations, sitting on certain things and not on other things, you know. I don't think sitting on tiger skins is really cool anymore. you tell people, well, this isn't a real tiger skin, this is a make-believe tiger skin, okay. And wearing lots of clothes. You know, in India, people's picture of a guru is long hair and naked except for a loincloth, sitting cross-legged on a tiger skin, right? I guess you're arrested in Sedona. No, it's okay to get a haircut. It's okay to take a shower. It's okay to sit on a bath towel. It doesn't have to be a tiger skin. And all these things that are traditional. You see, those are not spiritual, those are ethnic. And a lot of spirituality is confused with the ethnic background out of which it arose, you know, the country of its origin, the national identities of that country, etc. Spirituality is more the realization we talked about this morning, that one is the context in which content arises. There's a more advanced stage yet. There is the negation of content as self, the realization of context as self, then the even more advanced realization that one is both context and content, but not limited thereby by the in content is the essence of context. The formless is innate within form, in that one is not just beyond form and just the formless, nor is one just the form, which one thought before one became enlightened. but is one is both form and formless, and therefore one no longer separates form and formless. One is not only context, but also content, but one is the formless within form. That which one is the formless within form, without which form could not exist, and yet one is not limited by that form. One both is and is not at the same time, because those are only categories of thought with no intrinsic reality, no self-substantial reality. Those are only points of observation. Yeah. Is it appropriate or integrous to use kinesiology to help the government? Here's a good question. Yeah, the FBI and the CIA, right, that comes up every once in a while. Well, we did a videotape, I think we'll call Volume 1, Power versus Force, and I think at that time we calibrated. We did do that. We checked out the FBI and the CIA and the ATF. ATF. Yeah, and then the news later on revealed what we'd already discovered in kinesiology. I don't know whether we're allowed to do that anymore or not. See, I don't know whether this is something we can do or not do. We'll have to ask. These are questions we have permission to ask in this front of this audience. Resist? No. Okay. See, you don't always get permission. In other words, the technique would have to be used integrously, and even if you, let's say, wrote Washington and say, you know, we used kinesiology and we found that there was a terrorist working in the Minneapolis office, they'd say, yeah, right. I doubt very much it would meet with much credibility. Why is that? Because it comes out of the nonlinear reality, and government agencies like science live within linear reality. So it would sound sort of hoo-ha to them, sort of peculiar, weird, far out, strange. We just use it for our own information, And whenever we ask, can we use it for the public good or something, so far we've always gotten no. I don't know why. It could be that the gift is a gift primarily for spiritual growth, okay? The kinesiologic method of which we're using is a gift primarily for spiritual intention, resist. It's a gift for a greater than just spiritual intention, resist. We always get a no about demonstrating it for government reasons, resist. That's true, we always get a no, I don't know why. We don't need to know why, resist. You don't need to know. Oh, that's a break. I'm always relieved when I get that, the door is shut. It says, don't ask about that. Thank you. Now you're dismissed from any responsibility. I mean, what if you're at home and you find out there's a guy named Joe and he's working in the Minneapolis office and he's really working for the so-and-so? What's your life going to become like? Probably not too good, huh? You'd be worrying about, shouldn't I reveal this? Shouldn't I run to Washington? Shouldn't I knock on doors? I mean, maybe it would not be so peaceful or good for anything or anyone. As we said, if the world as we see it is the unfoldment of a karmic coherence, if there's a karmic coherence unfolding itself, then one could be interfering with the karmic destiny of other people, agencies, entities, countries, civilizations, cultures. You know what I'm saying? You don't necessarily have the karmic entitlement to put a wrench in the monkey works. There's a nice way of putting it. So that's a relief, folks, isn't it? We don't have to save the world. I'd like to know any more other questions you have, because I want to make sure we complete them all, and then I want to meet with any people that want to meet with me. The idea of treating the body as a temple is a construction, because everything is a temple, if you see it as such. Because everything is divinity coming into existence, fulfilling its potentiality in the discernible world of form, everything is a temple. The kitty's kittiness and body is the temple of the kitty, right? Is it not? It's God's intention of kittiness manifesting as kitty. The kitty's body is the kitty's temple. Resist. Yep. So, because you see, you see the divinity of all that exists. All that exists only does so by virtue of the Creator. That which comes into existence as a result of the creation, as a creation by God. So all that exists is divine by virtue of the source of its existence. Nothing comes into existence except as a creation of God. Consequently, all that exists is divine innately. The fact that it can be perceived differently doesn't change its innate reality. A dagger is a dagger. It is neither good nor bad. How one constructs it and perceives of the dagger then makes the dagger appear to be what it is to your intentionality and your previous programming. However, in and of itself, the dagger is just the perfect expression of daggerness being a dagger. Yeah? Yeah. It has the capacity to come in to existence. All that exists, exists because of the divinity of its Creator. I can't always read all these questions. Okay. There's a question about dealing with the esoteric. I recommend generally to avoid the exotic, the esoteric, the occult. In the Bible it says to avoid the supernatural. It doesn't deny that the supernatural exists, so that there is a supernatural. That Ouija boards don't work, that psychics aren't frequently correct. What it says, it doesn't say that it's not, that it has no reality. It just says don't go there. Why don't go there? Because first of all, it's an invisible realm. You have no idea who or what you're dealing with, what you're talking to. You're dealing with astral realms that are full of things that are beyond your comprehension. If you calibrate the energy field of various astral enterprises, entities on the other side, supposed masters, teachers, and all these things. If you calibrate the energy level, you'll find they're usually lower astral. And some of them become quite famous over time, legendary almost. But when you calibrate the energy level of that entity, it becomes apparent that your enlightenment is not what it's interested in. You know, invest in thoroughbred horses is not exactly whatever. First of all, you're not equipped to deal with it. You're not equipped to deal with it. Secondly, it's invisible. Unless you calibrate it, you have no idea of the level of integrity. My own experience or understanding of it is, or experience with it has been, the lower astral is filled with those energies which have denied God and hate God, refused God. The way you get to lower astral is you refuse or you hate God. And one reason you do this is you're envious of God because you think that the core of your own ego is God. The refusal to give up the imaginary divinity of the ego and surrender it to God is the refusal that gets you to the lower astral. The lower astral is made up of those who refuse God and hate God, but who are aware that having done so, they have now denied themselves access. The human, by virtue of the nature of being the human, has the potentiality to evolve to heaven and to the presence and the awareness of God, and therefore is hated for that. The best way to cripple the human from doing that is to ensnare him so that the most worthy prey of the lower astral is the evolving spiritual student. The spiritual student who is on their way, seriously committed, and starts going into beatific spaces, tracks them right out of the lower astral like bang, like gravity. They come right out like jackals waiting for the prey. What makes you vulnerable to them is your innocence. The spiritual naivete of the, what am I trying to think of a word? Spiritual maturity comes at considerable cost. A true teacher tries to, by advisement, give you the information you need to bypass those snares. If you get caught in the snare, the evolution of consciousness will can proceed, but it can be exquisitely awful and painful and agonizing for great lengths of time. All right, so the evolving spiritual aspirant, the naivete is the downside in which they are attacked and get hooked. All kinds of very outlandish schemes are presented. The way to get to heaven is to kill Americans and blow them up. You know, people buy that. They buy that out of spiritual naivete. They actually believe it. Let's see if they actually believe it. You think they're just brainwashed? They actually believe that by killing Americans, you get to heaven and you serve Allah. They actually believe that. Resist. There you go. If I can convince you that going out and killing innocent people and children is serving God, then you'll do it. Hitler did it with a whole nation of people, got them all to march their death. World War II, we saw whole generations, whole nations marching off to death. And those weren't even spiritual gurus, they were just political ones. So you see how vulnerable the human psyche is. Basically, the human psyche is innocent. It's like the hardware, and you can program it with any software. Start early enough, you can program any consciousness to believe anything. Even when confronted by its opposite, it will sit there and refuse it. I see in this week's Time magazine, the Japanese spiritual leader who released the sarin gas in the Japanese subway. A very interesting follow-up article. Having gassed all these innocent people for no reason whatsoever, not even a spiritual justification, not even a rationalization, he has no lack of followers. How do you explain that? An interviewer with a woman there who joined that Japanese pseudo-spiritual cult after he did that. When asked why, she said because she's afraid of death. Weird, huh? All right. So even somebody demonstrably demonic even a five-year-old would know that this is a demonic entity, still has no lack of followers. So the downside of human naivete, then, makes us all vulnerable. If it wasn't for the fact we were all vulnerable, we all would have become Buddhas thousands of years ago. It's because we didn't know any better out of ignorance and innocence that one is prey to those who are more advanced in deception. Don't fool yourself that you are smarter than the deceptive capacity of lower astrals. You're not. The first thing that will save you is humility. You are not smarter. These entities have been at it for millennia. They can sense the slightest weakness in your psyche and know just how to pull that out. And they'll have you licking their boots, thinking you're serving God. All right, I don't want to build them up to be greater than what they are, but they are extremely clever. Extremely clever. All right, so the only thing that will guard you against it is spiritual education and sophistication. One of the reasons that I have been a champion of the kinesiologic method is because man can't tell truth from falsehood. Unless you're intuitively quite advanced spiritually, you just don't get that that's out. You don't get that that's out. So don't just fool of people, naively led by the nose through all kinds of astral circus stunts by all kinds of incredulous, unbelievable entities on the other side, sacrificing wife, children, families. Can't have sex with each other, but you can have with me. I mean, the delusional craziness that goes on, you say, nobody believe that. Oh, yes, they do. They believe it. They believe it. In this lifetime, we've seen gurus go up and go down. We've seen them collect millions of dollars worth of vehicles, cars, millions of dollars of money, and then tell the public that they're higher than Jesus and crash. Higher than Jesus, come on. You'd have to calibrate over 1,000 to be higher than Jesus. No, so we've seen them crash and burn one after another. Because we're innocent, we believe in purity and goodness and all these kind of things. We're not on our guard about such things. One time I was in New York City in the Three Guys restaurant, and I met a well-known guru. At that time I was enthused about a certain technique, and I said, I think we should share this with the world. Share this with the world, see? I believe in discovering a thing and then sharing it with the world. I mean, that's what the purpose of discovering it is, to share it with the world. At this point, he became livid. Livid. Give it away for free? I thought, monasteries and the priesthood, everybody's struggling with sin. And here's a way of letting go of sin as an attachment. Sin, nothing but an attachment. We'll take it to the monasteries, we'll take it to the priests, we'll take it to the public. At that point, the strangest thing happened. All of a sudden, another voice came through him. I'd known this guy for years. Another voice came through him and spoke in a totally different energy field, and it was like the door of hell opened up. A horrible energy accompanied this, and it said, anything worth anything is worth, if you give it away, you say that it's valueless, this and that. Then the voice went on to tell me how Jesus and the Buddha were just astrals, and how Henry Ford had done more for mankind than on the Jesus Christ and Buddha and all the other, and Krishna and all of them together. Went on and on and on like that. So it's almost like you reach a certain level of spiritual awareness, you trigger it's, you might say it's opposite, you know? You want to give it away for free, instantly it wants you to sell it. You know, I'm saying it's strange, you know? Totally unexpected, out of the blue. We all know that spiritual wisdom says leave Ouija boards alone. Is that universal? We're all in agreement? You've all heard that? If anybody told you that Playing with Ouija boards is good for your spiritual awareness? Oh, universally it's condemned. Everybody says, stay away from Ouija boards. It doesn't say they don't work. It says stay away from them. It's because the astral looks to dominate you. Pretty soon you're beginning to want to serve the astral on the other side, and the astral entity loves to gain power over a human and delay his progression to God. He says, you're on your way as a human being. Your destiny is ultimately salvation and heaven, etc. The entity who has cut themselves off from that potentiality gains credit in its own domain by holding you back. You understand what I'm saying? The more converts it can take out of the spiritual, legitimate spiritual dimension, the greater becomes its power. The greater becomes its power. So the rulers of great astral domains are extremely clever. Now, never try to pit your wits against them. They've been at it for millennia. They're experts at manipulating, dissimulating, sounding pious, all kinds of fancy names, mystery entities from ancient Greek mysteries, the ancient something, the ancient mystery is always another way of, so these are called glamorizations. Falsity by glamorization. I am Master so-and-so from ancient Greece. Yeah, right. We know that the universe, it consists of the various astral domains, the inner so-called inner planes. We know where you go from heaven to the higher astral, to the lower middle astral, lower astral, etc. We know that there's heavens and hells. And we know that there's purgatories, because certainly life, the life experience of the average human being here is purgatorial. You can go from the pits of severe pain to the highest ecstasy. You can pick the luciferic and the satanic and the demonic, or you can pick enlightenment. So this an earthly existence is almost purgatorial in that you have a choice of all dimensions. From here you can go anywhere. And the temptations then arise from all these various dimensions. And by choice then, your own buoyancy in the sea of choices, the karmic potentiality of evolution of consciousness, is decided from moment to moment. Every single decision changes the infinite potentiality. What purpose does it serve? I don't see that it serves any purpose. I can live without it myself. Like a broken ankle. I mean, I'd get along so without it. I think a teacher should share what he's learned about the downside, because I hear that sucking sound as people go down, and people that were once great teachers, and you calibrate their early books, and now you calibrate what their consciousness level is now, or before it was before they died, and you saw that they crashed and burned. It would be like spiritual evolution is the enemy of that which is grossly negative. And it seeks to pull you down. It seeks to pull you down. It hates that which it sees as more powerful and more evolved than itself. That's about all I can figure out of it. Does it serve any purpose? Not any that I can see. The seduction of the glamorous, the spiritually, the pseudo-spiritually glamorous, is seductive. The trappings, the gizmos that go with it. That's one reason, one of the main reasons, in fact, the main reason, that I wrote about the levels of consciousness, kinesiologic technique. I'm going to think about a famous entity around Sedona right now. He's well known. I have permission, if I don't mention his name, to calibrate his energy resist. His energy is over 200 resist. The entity, his master on the other side, is over 200 resist. Now, this is a guy with all kinds of followers, all kinds of crap. he talks to Master Baba on the other side, and they're full of crap, man. Told him. Pure 100% BS, 100% BS. The naive are sucked in by the ooh-ah-ooh. You know, the first time you get a psychic reading, it's a knockout, isn't it? Or somebody reads the cards, you say, well, somebody reads the tarot cards. I see your grandmother has a very advanced case of something. Wow, your grandmother does. You go, whew, wow, Zell. I mean, it's a boggler, right? To the naive, it's a boggler. Doesn't mean the astral realm doesn't exist. It just means its effect on your life is going to be deleterious. Because pretty soon, the entity on the other side will have control over you. You're going to want its approval. You're going to follow its advice. You're going to be investing your money in race horses. We're going to have to call it to an end. You get me going on a subject that I have a considerable interest in because, you know, in Sedona, this is rampant. The fallacious masquerades as the real. A spiritual student, one of his responsibilities, so he doesn't go down the tubes, because you're juicy pluckins. A group like this is juicy pluckins. It's just what the lower astrals are waiting for. Master Hoo-Ha is waiting for you. Card tricks, magic stones, magic gems, magic, all kinds of magic, stones, rituals, the glamour of it all. And you see, you come out of a world of reason and logic, and you come into the supernatural world, everybody's knocked out about it. You know, the first time you get a psychic reading, it boggles everybody's minds. First time you get the tarot cards read. How did she know my uncle had cancer? You know what I'm saying? How'd she know that? Well, because there's more than one dimension, folks, and yet if you hold it in mind, it's held in mind in other invisible domains as well. So what you think is secret and unknowable except to yourself, you know, is out there. Anybody can read it. And with a little training, you yourself can read other people's psyches, and there's nothing to it. So the serious spiritual student has to abide by the cautions of the great teachers. All the great teachers have said, it isn't that it doesn't exist and that it has no reality. They say, don't go there. You're not equipped to go there. You're not trained to deal with lower astrals. They can dissimulate in ways that are so convincing that unless you're quite erudite. I was in a very advanced state, I mean a very advanced state at one time, beyond all form, in a state of infinite power. How do we describe the state? It was this great beyond, a state beyond all form, beyond all wantingness, beyond all individuality. It was at one with the infinite power of the universe. And a knowingness came on, not an entity. I've never seen any entities. A knowingness came on. The knowingness spoke thusly. Now that you realize you're beyond individual karma, and that there is no God to which you are answerable, inasmuch as you have no karma to begin with, and no such God as religion believes in even exists anyway, you're beyond all karma. You're answerable to nothing. All power is yours. Own it. That's what the knowingness came to me as. Answerable to nothing. You've got no karma to answer for. And no arbitrary God up there who's going to punish you, even if you did have karma to answer for. You don't believe in the God of the Old Testament. You're beyond form. You're beyond individual personal karma. That was true. At that point, I was totally beyond all personal karma. Answerable to nothing and to no one. The power was really based on relinquishing love as any kind of reality and seeing love as a limitation. If you let go of any kind, if you let go of love itself, then all power is yours. All power in the universe is yours. That's a fact. Same temptation that Jesus Christ was presented with. Not many people have been through that pass. It was like a very high pass. I saw who had been through there, and I saw the answer that he'd given. And the defect was to try to own the power of God and without owning the love of God. God is infinite power, also infinite love. So the luciferic energy tries to seal the power of God but escape the love of God, because that would be a limitation. You can't kill off millions of people if you're still capable of love. You have to eliminate lovingness, and now you can kill them and have infinite domain over them. Anyway, at that space, the knowingness of this consciousness was already sufficiently advanced to negate that temptation and say no to it. Can never be used for personal gain. I saw Jesus Christ had been there and said no to it. I saw some other gurus throughout history who had said yes to it. And I saw why they saw yes. It's because they had not had the karmic gain of having been educated by their own teacher in advance to know better. So I feel it's my responsibility to share such things, that such a thing will not befall you. Why? Because these things come unannounced, unexpected. You're just sitting there meditating or releasing on something, chanting, maybe doing the Jesus prayer, walking through the woods, and all of a sudden it comes to you. You got no time to think it over. How am I going to answer this? How am I going to handle it? Unless you've heard about it before and can bring it right up. It'll come up. Having heard it, it comes up at the time. Having heard it, you've heard it now. When that comes to you, the knowingness arises out of beyond thinkingness. Having heard it, one is now protected. So those that have fallen, I feel a compassion for. They were somehow unprotected. Their teachers did not share with them. Maybe their teachers didn't know. And so they fell over the abyss. The way back from over the abyss is hellish and can be awful and take long, long periods of time, longer than anybody in this audience can know what I mean by long, long eons of time to come back from the serious fall of grace. I say this out of respect for the evolution of the consciousness of everybody in this room, because everybody in this room has reached the point of plump desirability. By that which grows fatter and stronger on your plump little innocent spirit. And so I don't want any of my chickens eaten by them. I don't get what he's saying.
The person that we were calibrating, you wouldn't say the name of.
Because it's sort of everyone's karmic responsibility to discover these things themselves, see? And if we had a different relationship, don't forget this is a public meeting. Let's say if we worked together as a small group of people in which we shared confidences and discoveries, such as I do with Susan, let's say, it's a different thing. It could be that there's a different consequence of speaking publicly. For one thing, it could be shocking to somebody. So a lot of times people ask me, what is such and such a guru, a book, calibrate? I want them to find out for themselves, because there could be like a shock. I went through a shock like that one time. It was horrible. I discovered the guru that I've been following, the heart chakra, was zero. He had zero energy in the heart chakra. Suddenly everything that he'd said took on a whole different context. Whew. So, all right. We are preparing a book where we're going to do 1,000 calibrations. And again, it's iffy. We have to constantly ask, should we share this? Can we share this? Is this shareable? Is this beneficial to the world? Is it beneficial to society? Could such a thing have, an unexpected negative result? So you can't be like the bull in the China shop, you know what I'm saying? We could use the method in like a bull in the China shop, you know, go right through society like the Grim Reaper, you know what I mean? But that's not the purpose. So we get that the purpose is merely educational. Each of us needs to take responsibility for the evolution of our own consciousness. And in so doing, we earn a certain karmic merit. All I want people to do is to be aware. Don't be naively foolish, fall for anything. Be aware that there is a downside, a certain amount of fallacy out there that masquerades as the legitimate. Jesus Christ said the same thing. He said, beware the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? He didn't know kinesiology. He didn't tell you how, did the Frenchman. Yes, he did. By their fruits ye shall know them. Okay, so all we've had to go as far as discernment, spiritual discernment over the ages has been, by their fruits we shall know them. We could say killing 3,000 innocent people would indicate that this is probably not of the most pure and delicate, you know. By their fruits we shall know them. All right, so that's all we've had to go by. And by karmic merit, apparently, in the late 1980s, we were like given a way of telling the wolf from the sheep. We never had one before. And of course, the desire to write the book Power versus Force came from the excitement of discovering, my God, we got a way of telling the wolf in the sheep's clothing from the sheep from the wolf for the first time. And as I said, I spent some years agonizing over how to share it and whether I should share it and in what style and how to best present it and to give it the most possible respect. I went through all the work of getting a PhD and putting it through routine scientific presentation as quantitative and qualitative analysis and calibration of the levels of human consciousness to a university faculty, so that, and I had all the statistics done by a statistical firm that ran it through all their computers, etc. So I made sure first that it was solid on a scientific, rational, logical basis, because from that we were going to then move through the levels of consciousness from the linear Newtonian domain to the non-linear spiritual domain, the reality of which was already apparent to me, having totally experienced it at age 37, whenever he came on. The totality of the absoluteness of the presence of God was so stunning and profound, it staggered me out for 10 years. And I never did mention it for 30 years, in fact, never did mention it. So I think we're safe if we respect that we owe it to the divinity within us. I say, I owe it to God to share what I have learned. I owe it to God. To share what I have learned with others, to share whatever benefit I have gained with them, that mankind will not be led down the dark path to hell the way he has in the past, because he certainly has been seduced into hell in the past, has he not? The great seducers of mankind are historic figures. Many of them are still celebrated. All right, so that is where we'll conclude today. I've tried to share all that I can that I feel would be most beneficial and helpful, and to be guarded on your way, to have the breastplate of truth, as Jesus said. Isn't that what he said, the breastplate of truth? To guard one against what I call spiritual seduction, and to be aware that there are those entities within the universe who do not have your enlightenment as their interest. They are not interested in your salvation or your enlightenment. In fact, they gain their power, prestige, and domains by destroying yours. You see that in the criminal hierarchy. What is a made guy? A made guy has proven that he's more evil than a less evil guy. Your status comes from killing another human being with a witness, not just robbing a convenience store. Convenience store, you're way down in the hierarchy, aren't you? So the more wicked you can be, the more you rise in the hierarchies of the lower astral realm. So we have, you understand, there's a paradoxical. If you can bring down a really evolved guru, then your reign in the world of power, which is what was presented to me, becomes higher. So these entities I just want to give you a little paranoia for the month. These entities want to juice you, baby. Just keep yourself on guard. All right, thank you for today, folks. I love you.